It's enough to make you sick. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principle Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
Great to be back with you again in the studio. This is a very interesting topic, and unfortunately, it's hitting home in a lot of places. And it has to because of the numbers we're going to look at.
Yeah, well, we're looking at a couple of things today, Chuck. And today our theme is healthcare, because that seems to be a big issue, Charles. Everybody's talking about Obamacare, and the state of Ohio is talking about Medicaid expansion, and everybody's debating back and forth over things. But here's a little nugget. We'll kind of just start with this, and then we're going to kind of dig a little deeper and look at one of the areas of healthcare that we really need some more biblically based answers for. Just recently, I believe this week, the American Society of Actuaries released a new study. And that study was about how much states could expect to see their average health care costs, the cost of insurance coverage in their states, change with the full implementation of the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare. Here's the fast and dirty number. According to the Society of Actuaries, they believe that insurers will have to pay out on average 32% more for claims on individual health policies. Now, Chuck, we've said this before. We even say it in our class when we teach Institute on the Constitution, is these companies are not running charities. They're not in business to give away the store. Insurance companies are there to make a profit.
Well, let's talk about this for a second. They are in business to make a profit, and most of them are pro-Obamacare, because what's happening is, under the Obamacare plan, which is in fact economically fascism.
Yes, it is.
And let's explain that for a minute. That is government-private partnerships. That is fascism. What it means is that companies are allowed to maintain ownership of their means of production.
So in other words, progressive insurance isn't going to turn into government progressive
insurance. No, sure isn't. It's still going to be privately owned, but the government will provide the capital and they will force customers into their coffers. Then there is competition between the companies.
Well, but let's step back. Let's look at this. Okay, they will provide the capital. They're calling it reimbursements or payments or subsidies or credits. See, for an insurer to take on somebody who's otherwise not insurable, well, those people can't pay those premiums, obviously. That's the reason why they're uninsurable to start with. Well, the government will come in by subsidizing not the individual, because they'll charge them a fine if they don't take this coverage, but the insurance company. So there's your public-private partnership. There's on that end of it. Now, on the other end of it, you know, you talked about they would bring in the capital. They'd also push in the clients to this business to use. Well, what do we got? We've got the exchanges, where insurers will be certified as, these are the ones you can come to. And oh, by the way, individuals and employers, if you don't provide coverage, we will start fining you with heavy fines. Oh, that's a disincentive to not getting into the program. So yes, you're right. This is fascism.
And what will go on here, this is why the companies love this, because it's a guaranteed profit.
It's exactly what it is. And we know that guaranteed profits is a function. When you've read Frederick Bastiat's book, The Law, you come to understand that guaranteed profits is one of the operational means of socialism.
That's right. Bastiat directly calls it plunder.
Yes.
Meaning
legal plunder.
Legal plunder, he calls it. And it's legal because the government passes it. It doesn't mean it's right.
Right, exactly. But so, Chuck, like I said, that was an average of 32%. Now, let's dial it down for the folks at home. That's you and me and everybody else who lives in Ohio. The Society of Actuaries has broken it down state by state. Now, it's funny, Chuck, because certain states are going to see a decrease in their premiums. States such as New York, Vermont, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, New Jersey. Is it starting to sound like that there's some interesting things going on there?
Oh, there's some real interesting thing. Look, also Washington and Oregon.
Yeah, Washington and Oregon are also going to have decreases.
Decreases.
Now, but here's the other side of the coin, the states that are going to have increases. And I'm looking at some of the top states to get increases in their premiums. And I'll start from the lowest to the highest. Okay, we have Idaho at 62.2% increase. We have Maryland, 66.6% increase. We have Indiana, our neighbor to the west, 67.6% increase. Wisconsin, 80% increase. And ladies and gentlemen, just because you know I'm bringing it home, Ohio, who's at the top of the list, 80.9% increase in the cost of insurance under full implementation of Obamacare.
All I can say is, we're number one. We're number one. We're number one.
I'd rather win the NCAA tournament than pay these pay an 81% increase in my health care costs.
I'd rather completely forget about the NCAAs and never have them take place ever again than pay 81% increase in my health insurance costs.
Now, if you think that, you know, okay, well, there's got to be somebody higher. Well, California, it's only a 62% increase in their costs. Florida, 20% increase.
I think they're a drop.
No, they're an increase.
Are they?
More than 20% for Florida. Point is, ladies and gentlemen, that we are going to see massive cost increases in coverage because when you expand coverage, you're bringing in those who insurance companies, because it's a business model to start with, have deemed that they are not coverable under traditional insurance, and they have alternatives, the pre-existing conditions, things of that nature. Now, everybody says, oh, that's horrible. Well, somebody's paying for it, ladies and gentlemen, and those folks who have the pre-existing conditions probably aren't in a position to pay for it themselves. So the premiums are going to get shifted to everybody else. Now, if you think, well, I don't have to pay it because I'll just do something else. No, that's what Obamacare is all about. You must take minimum coverage or else you pay a fine. Now, that minimum coverage, I think, Chuck, was somewhere in the $15,000 to $20,000 coverage ranges.
Yeah, even that's really low if you think about it, Barry. Right, I mean, if you have your appendix out, it costs you $8,000 or $9,000.
It is, but the whole idea of government telling you you must have insurance is, well, frankly, our founders are rolling over in their graves.
Of course they are. But even the plan that you and I are on, you know, let's give a word in that we receive no remuneration for this. We just love the plan.
Yes.
Barry and I are both on the Samaritan Ministries plan. That is currently exempt, but that does not mean that when this thing fails, and let's talk about it, Barry, just for a second. This system is designed to fail.
Well, of course it is.
Everybody is going to be falling off the private health insurance bandwagon, and here's why. When I've got people who are coming to me and telling me that they think Obamacare is going to be great because they have an uninsurable or nearly uninsurable condition that costs them $3,000 a month, well, what's going to happen to that $3,000 a month premium? It's not going to even out. It's going to go up to about $6,000 a month.
Well, of course it will.
Which nobody can pay.
Because the larger number of people coming into the plan are not all paying. That's the whole thing with the government end of it. Now, we're going to be talking about a little piece of legislation, I believe, next week that is going to try to fix that problem, at least in Ohio. And it's a very creative way of doing so.
This is an attempt to make the system fail so that the single-payer system will come in. And the single-payer system that the insurance companies think that they want Obamacare, but what's eventually going to happen is they're going to fail because everybody won't be able to afford this spread out cost of health insurance. And so everybody will demand that a single payer plan come in, and that single payer will, of course, be the government, just like it'll be run like Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. Of course, Medicaid's the state, but
yeah, but it's still tied together.
It's still tied to the federal money. And the only reason Medicaid's at the state level is because the state is acting as an administrative clerk for Medicare.
Oh, wait a minute. So the state becomes just an administrative arm of the federal government?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, okay. I think I've heard about that before in history. There have been a lot of plans out there.
Oh, yeah. Well, the Virginia plan.
Virginia plan back during the time of the Constitution.
And we'll be talking about that coming up.
But, you know, Chuck, one of the things that helps lower costs and lower premiums is prevention, right?
Yeah.
And that's something, if folks who know me or have ever heard me know, that I'm deeply involved in an area of health care cost prevention known as abstinence education.
Yes.
As a matter of fact, when I worked in the legislature, I helped write Ohio's abstinence law for my boss, along with a number of other folks from around the state, to basically teach children about the consequences of having sexual relationships outside of a marriage that was monogamous and faithful, and that, which, of course, the homosexual rights groups, which we talked about on yesterday's program, are all up in arms about, because you're excluding us because we can't get married. Well, you shouldn't be having homosexual sex. So there's a big issue with that, too. But here's the deal. Ever since we've been working on this issue, and this goes even back before I got in the legislature, they were working on this stuff in the 80s, there's always been this government industry cabal between groups like Planned Parenthood and other healthcare providers to basically try to destroy the abstinence message, to say, oh, well, you got to teach kids how to be responsible with putting on condoms and taking birth control pills and getting Gardasil shots now.
Yeah.
And it keeps going. Well, what has been the consequence of that particular theme from the healthcare industry? Well, Centers for Disease Control, and this is the other part of our story today, Chuck. The Centers for Disease Control just released a report, and the numbers are staggering, ladies and gentlemen. Now, this is the one where we're talking about. You think 81% increase in your healthcare premiums hits home close to you? If you've got kids or grandkids, this one hits even closer. The CDC has now identified that there are 110,197,000 venereal diseases or infections in the U.S. Now, Chuck, you think about that. There are only 312 million people in the United States. That's 37 or 38% of the population is carrying a sexually transmitted infection.
Well, and 20% of that number is between 15 and 24.
That's correct, ladies and gentlemen. 50% of that number. As a matter of fact, in the study, they showed the latest data in 2008 that there were 19.7 million new cases. And that of those 19.7 million new cases, 9.78 million of them were in that 15 to 24 age group. Now, ladies and gentlemen, for a while now, educators, the OEA, the National Education Association, Planned Parenthood, health providers have all been decrying teaching kids this puritanical stuff about saving themselves for marriage. How about we just teach them how to save themselves from death? Because many of these STDs are not just minor inconveniences that flare up every once in a while and kind of put a crimp in your sex life. These are things that lead to cervical cancers, that lead to impotency and infertility, that lead to other diseases and infections that kill our young people.
Well, looking at failure to put two and two together, didn't we just talk yesterday about the head of the Republican National Committee telling us we needed to abandon our principle?
Yeah, Old Testament heretics. Abandon that Old Testament philosophy of trying to do what God says is right versus what man believes is right.
I would ask how that's working out.
Not so well. According to this, over a third of our population in the United States, ladies and gentlemen, is carrying around a sexually transmitted infection. Now, if you think about this, now, if you are among the folks who have made it through the sexual revolution, the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, the 2000s, and you're married or you have not contracted a sexually transmitted disease, pat yourself on the back, because the odds are getting worse and worse for our children and our children's children that they won't be able to find a mate, a potential life partner, who doesn't bring something into the marriage.
Very difficult. If you think about these numbers, 64% of people don't have, but that means 36 or 37% do. That's a significant piece of the pool.
Okay, now here's another way of putting this into your head so that it sticks. According to the National Center for Education Statistics, in the 2007-2008 school year, there were 1.524 million bachelor's degrees awarded in the United States. That means, ladies and gentlemen, that we had six times the number of new sexually transmitted infections in the 15 to 24 age group than we had bachelor's degrees being awarded to that age group. Six times as many.
Yeah.
So for every college graduate sitting there with their sheepskin, there are six others that are taking some kind of antibiotic or other type of preparation, maybe, if they even know they have the disease.
And if there's a treatment for it.
And if there's a treatment for it.
Because a number of these have no treatments.
So we talk about wanting to have our kids and have a great life and the American dream. Well, it's kind of hard to have a great life if you have been a victim of our faulty healthcare philosophy, which believes that young people should go ahead and have sex with whoever they want to, whatever gender they feel like, just so long as they wear a little protection or take a shot or a pill, and everything will be okay. Well, guess what? Those chickens are coming home to roost, Chuck.
Well, as we've been talking about all week, Barry, you cannot allow your worldview to become piecemeal. It has to be a comprehensive one in which all these things are considered in one big piece. And that's the problem here. We're trying to cut out certain parts of it and do it a different way. Do it, if it feels good, do it method. But we'll stick to the right thing over here, but we'll just cut this part out.
And not just the human cost, the social cost. There's an economic cost, too. The CDC estimates it's $16 billion, billion with a B, just from the new cases alone, the 19.7 million new cases, in direct medical costs. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I don't think we can tax ourselves enough to cover all of this with Obamacare.
No, it's cascading cost. That being said, join us again tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.